Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Wanjiku Mwaura. And remember, we are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa, where you can share your thoughts on the stories that we are covering, and we'll read some of your thoughts.
Coming up, rare win for gay rights as Kenya courts rules forced anal test illegal. But what does this mean for the gay people in the country?
The win to us means a lot. Positively is that Kenyans should understand that we are not subjected to violence, like forceful anal examination.
It's a plus to us. We see there is a need, because when the case was going on, people, they were fearing to go to access services from the government facilities.
We will also be hearing why the Sierra Leone election body is not happy with the police ahead of the upcoming presidential runoff elections.
You're right, Wanjiku. These are just some of the stories we have lined up for you. But first, here's a chance to listen to what has been happening around the world.
My name is Jen Nyinge with DW News. French security forces have shot dead an armed man who held a number of people as hostages inside a supermarket in southern France. The gunman killed at least three people and several others were injured. Witnesses say he was heavily armed and was demanding the release of Salah Abdi Salam, the only living suspect in the 2015 Paris attacks that killed 130 people. The Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has met more than 100 girls released on Wednesday by Boko Haram militants. Buhari said that the government negotiated with the militants to ensure all the girls are safe and vowed to ensure the release of those still in captivity. The girls were abducted from their school in Dapchi in an incident that brought back memories of a similar abduction in 2014 of 270 Chibok girls. Here is President Buhari.
While parents of Dapchi girls rejoice because of the reunion with their children, I want to appeal to the Chibok community never to lose hope or to despair. We are determined, as never before, to bring back our remaining Chibok daughters, and this we must accomplish, and that will be soon by God's grace.
The Russian government says the European Union is being drawn into an anti-Russian campaign instigated by Britain and the United States. The EU has recalled its ambassador in Moscow, and EU leaders have backed Britain's assertion that Moscow is likely to blame for the poisoning of a former Russian spy and his daughter in British soil. EU President Donald Tusk and German Chancellor Angela Merkel said more steps were expected as early.
The discussions on the nerve gas attack in Salisbury were very intense and marked by great solidarity. We have said very clearly that we view this as a serious challenge for our common security, and we agree with the British government's position that it's very likely that Russia is responsible for this and that there is no other plausible explanation.
This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. The European Union has wrapped up a summit in Brussels with a call to the United States to exempt the bloc permanently from import tariffs on steel and aluminium products. They also agreed on a political roadmap on a transition phase for Brexit. Meanwhile, China has said it will fight to the end if US President Donald Trump goes ahead with the new trade tariffs. Trump has threatened to impose the tariffs because of what he says are unfair trade practices by the Chinese. His announcement sent global markets sliding as fears of a trade war grow. As much as $60 billion worth of annual Chinese exports to the US could be affected. U.S. President Donald Trump announced on Twitter on Friday that John Bolton will be his new national security advisor. Bolton has advocated using military force against Iran and North Korea. He's Trump's third national security advisor in 14 months. For more news and information, visit our website, dw.com, or our Facebook page, DW Africa. My name is Jen Nyinge.
You're still listening to DW's Africa Link program. I'm Wanji Komora.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura. And of course, first I'd like to listen to welcome all our Facebook listeners. We have Jimmy Johnson and So Marius who are listening to us from Nigeria, as it seems. And of course, we begin today's program in Kenya, where, like many African countries, homosexuality is illegal and remains a controversial issue. Gay people have in the past been subjected to forced anal examinations to test whether they engaged in sex. That is why a decision by an appeal court to overturn this practice has elicited joyful reactions from activists who have long termed this practice torture and discriminative.
Now, Kenya was one of at least 8 countries that have used forced anal exams on suspected homosexuals since 2010, along with nations like Cameroon, Egypt, Uganda, and Zambia. As our correspondent Diana Wanyonyi reports, rights activists are hailing the verdict as a key victory for the gay community.
The landmark case was brought by the National Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission after 2 men, George Maina and Omar Idris, were charged with having gay sex and forced to undergo anal tests. And today, the lesbian and gay community were still in a celebratory mood and held an indoor meeting to chart the way forward. Esther Adhiambo, an officer at Initiative for Equality and Non-Discrimination, sheds light.
The meeting was to understand what exactly does it mean to win this case of not having forced anal examination to prove someone's homosexuality. And because not everybody understands, like we are human rights defenders, we understand. So how do we then trickle this down to the gays and the transgenders on the ground? So that was basically a collective of organizations that advance human rights for lesbian, gay, bisexual individuals in Mombasa.
Adhiambo says the court ruling has motivated gay people to openly speak about the pain of forced medical tests, which have for long been conducted on gay and transgender people.
A metal being inserted in your anus is embarrassing. But because it's embarrassing, most people are not coming out. But after the case went to court, there are people who actually said that, you know, this was done to me. It has been something that has been going on silently.
For many gay and bisexuals, the verdict was long overdue.
We celebrate the win, and the win to us means a lot. Positively is that Kenyans should understand that we are not subjected to violence, like forceful anal examination. And to me, because of the community that I come from, it's important if people know that we are not part and parcel of violations, then it means our community, they are not going to be violated.
It's a plus to us. We as a male sex worker and also the bisexual people, we see there is a need, because when the case was going on, people, they were fearing to go to access services from the government facilities because of the annual examination which was done to our members. Actually, we are scaling up, all cascading to 90 people to know their status, people to get tested, and the last 90 so that people can be able to adhere to medication.
Esther Nelima, programs officer at Coast Sex Workers Alliance, says the decision will allow many gay people to visit health facilities because they will no longer be stigmatized by forced examinations.
We are human beings, irrespective of what we do, irrespective of where we come from, and we are entitled to those rights. And we expect other people also to treat us the same way we will also treat them.
Reactions from the landmark ruling on gays in Kenya. That report was compiled by Diana Wanyonyi. And of course, Wanjiko, this issue always elicits lots of reactions and talk.
Yes,
of our Facebook users.
Yes, indeed. And we've been receiving lots of this. One here from Damjan Novik says, it's a good move. These tests are just torture and don't prove anything. There's also another case currently underway in Kenya as well as in Angola that would decriminalize homosexuality, and I truly hope it passes. These are the words of Damjan Novik.
And there's one, Aboya Joseph, who says whatever they do should remain in their bed, but outside he thinks it's a rebellion.
Well, and Mickey here says, there is no such thing as an African way of life. A man must be free to do with their body as they deem fit. Only his God and his conscience should be his judge. Now, we will leave that for now and move on to the top story world. The World Trade Organization chief has warned that creating barriers to international trade would jeopardize the global economy after Washington slapped steep tariffs on Chinese imports, heightening fears of a trade war. As much as $60 billion worth of annual Chinese exports to the U.S. could be affected. Eddie Micah Jr. with this report.
World stock markets tumbled on Friday as fears grew of a tit-for-tat global trade war. U.S. President Donald Trump plans to hike tariffs on up to $60 billion in goods from China in retaliation, he says, to unfair trade practices.
We want reciprocal mirror. If they charge us, we charge them the same thing.
Beijing says like for like should not be the goal on trade, and it would rather convince Washington to change course. But the Chinese are ready to impose retaliatory tariffs on U.S. products like pork and aluminium. Hua Qingying is the spokesperson of the Chinese Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
China's position has been stated clearly. The information is plain to see. It's impolite not to give as good as one gets. We hope the United States can treat Chinese interests sincerely and solemnly and act rationally and prudently.
Business leaders are warning that a full-scale trade war would not benefit either side. Some commentators see Beijing's response to President Trump's latest tariff plans as relatively measured, but Washington is hinting that more punitive measures on trade could be on the way.
Eddie Micah Jr. with that report. And now from Washington, we head over to Sierra Leone, which is just 4 days away from conducting its presidential runoff election. But it appears spanners are being thrown into the works. The electoral body, National Election Commission, is accusing the police of intimidation.
And there's already a court action to obtain an injunction against the initial elections conducted on March 7th. So, will the presidential runoff election go ahead as scheduled on March 27th? Eunice Wanjiro presents this report by Claudia Anthony.
If the High Court of Sierra Leone grants an interim injunction, the presidential runoff election will be indefinitely postponed, pending hearing of the matter. Earlier this week, a lawyer from the incumbent party All People's Congress went to court seeking an interim injunction to cancel the runoff poll. His application demands a forensic audit of the National Electoral Commission, NEC, its internal systems, the Chief Electoral Commissioner, and the entire conduct of the 7th March elections. But that's not all that is facing the upcoming election. The NEC is accusing the police for interfering and obstructing the commissioners from executing their duties. The police denied allegation of intimidation and asked for cooperation, adding that both the police and the electoral body are on good working terms. The National Electoral Commission, on the other hand, insists there is police intimidation based on the manner in which their offices were entered, unwarranted and unannounced, staff arrested and documents retrieved from the computers of NEC staff. This long, drawn-out election has brought the country to a go-slow. Schools only opened for the first time this week since the election on March 7th, but they have again closed today in anticipation the runoff goes ahead on Tuesday. It is the same with commercial activities. Meanwhile, the security forces have increased operations due to politically motivated spate of violence in the past fortnight. With the elections just a few days away, people are still discussing whether the polls will go on as scheduled.
Eunice Wanjiro read that report prepared by Claudia Anthony.
And now, Onjiko, if we revisit our first story today, of course, it's the landmark ruling in Kenya. Lesbians and gays have won a case after a Kenyan appeal court blocked authorities from using an annual examination to test whether gay men had sex. And of course, this issue is, of course, getting lots of reactions. As we said earlier, Isaac Godwin says that's absurd that they attempted to carry out such a test.
Quite honestly, I think it's very inhumane to perform this kind of test. However, we also have another comment here from Joshua Pogu, who says it must be a sad day for Africans and indeed Kenyans. I'm not very sure what he means with this comment.
Yeah, but of course, if we listen to Athiambo, who was talking about it, she said that she hopes this is actually the first step towards having gay actually as a right in Kenya.
Yes, keep those comments coming. Welcome back to the program. My name is Wanjiko Mwaura.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura. Coming up,
we hear about one exemplary woman from Nigeria who has influenced the country's politics since 1944.
A lot of people used to come to the house to see me from all over Nigeria. And some of them were people who hadn't ever met her.
Well, who could she be? You have to stick around for that. And Zipora, on today's football show, the focus is on World Cup build-up matches.
You're right, and Jack Penfold will be telling us more on that. But of course, first we head to Cameroon, because Cameroon kicks off its busy elections this year with the senatorial elections slated for Sunday. Eight opposition political parties will face off with the ruling party, Cameroon Parliamentary Democratic Party, otherwise known as CPDM, of President Paul Biya, for the 70 elective senatorial seats. They will be elected by municipal councillors across the country with the remaining 30 slots, the prerogative of the president. So the question is, can the opposition bank on the growing unpopularity of Biya's 36-year-old rule to turn things around? Our correspondent Moki Kinzeka has more from Yaounde.
Unlike other elections, there is less activity at the headquarters of political parties. Officials of Cameroon's elections management body ELECAM say it is no surprise, since campaigning is taking place between political parties, their candidates, and the electoral college comprising of municipal councillors. Leonard Tumenta, an opposition candidate from the English-speaking Northwest region, says in spite of the ruling party's numerical strength, he is hopeful that things may turn out different because it will be a secret ballot and many are fed up with the political and economic crisis facing the country.
Farm to market route, we don't have them. If I'm a senator on the 25th, I will put pressure in the Senate so that the Senate can put pressure on the government to give my parents, my brothers and sisters basic necessities like farm to market route.
But some candidates from the ruling party, like Regina Mundi, believe it will not be a smooth sail for and are also soliciting for votes. Mundi believes she can be instrumental in resolving the crisis in the English-speaking regions, which has escalated since last year.
Many children are not going to school now. It is very, very disheartening. We want life in this region to come back to its normal situation. We must listen to the people. The people must tell us what they want.
Anglophone separatist groups have warned that they will not allow any elections in the English-speaking regions, which they now call an independent state called Ambazonia. Cameroon's electoral body is now calling on the government to reassure the security of all candidates and voters. Here is an official, Mbu Peter.
Elections Cameroon, cognizance of this fact, has lobbied with all the instances that are competent enough to deploy security. We have also advised individual security because security starts from that.
Analysts believe the elections will end with the ruling CPDM scoring a crushing majority since it dominates the Electoral College. The party has always insisted on what it calls party discipline and instructs its representatives to obey party hierarchy. Civil society worker and political analyst Tita Corbett has been educating the people to consider what agenda the candidates have to offer before making their choices.
We have to let the people understand that it is not just about political party, it's also about choosing the people who can represent you.
The elections will, in effect, mark the start of a busy electoral calendar to be followed by council, legislative and presidential elections later this year.
Moki Kinzeka with that report.
Now, we have this story on our Facebook page, that's DW Africa, and we asked you, does the opposition stand any chance to beat the ruling party?
Yes, Onjiko, and of course the responses are there. Siru Jude says, How can an election be conducted when the ruling party is already sure of 30% and do the so-called opposition parties are going in to fight with Bia again for the 70%? That's a good question.
It is a good question, a question of numbers there. As you do the numbers, let's hear this comment from Jennifer Dikai, who says, there shall be no elections in southern Cameroon. It's a do-or-die affair. Never again shall we vote the old regime. I think Jennifer here is underlining the need for change and to have new people in government.
Akko Amadi actually says there's no need of elections in Cameroon. It's all rigging and intimidation. The winner is already known and money is wasted in an already poor country.
And Clovis says, did you say 70 elective seats? Where are the other 30 to make it 100? Anyway, let me remind you that the winners are already known by now.
Well, those are your comments.
DW African Roots.
In our ongoing series, African Roots, we bring you the story of Margaret Ekpo. Who was she? Well, she was strong, she was outspoken, and she didn't just open doors for women, she kicked them down. The Nigerian women's rights activist and politician helped change the face of politics in Nigeria. This is her story, read by Abubakar Jalo.
This song is sung in Efik, the language of Margaret Ekpo, who grew up in southeastern Nigeria. The lyrics speak of love, compassion, bravery, strength and resilience, character traits mirrored in Margaret Ekpo's personality. When Margaret Ekpo was born in Cross River State in 1914, her chances of becoming a political icon looked slim. For one thing, she was a woman. For another, she was born into a country ruled by the British. But that did not stop Ekpo from starting to agitate against the colonialists. When she was still a young woman, she joined the National Council of Nigeria and the Cameroons, or the NCNC party. 97-year-old Etubong Eniang Essien is a contemporary of Margaret Ekpo.
She was a seamstress. Then later on, she joined up in politics. In 1944, that was the time which the NCNC was inaugurated.
Ekpo's first taste of politics was by chance. Her husband, a doctor, was upset about the discrimination of native doctors by the British administrators. But as a civil servant, he couldn't attend political meetings. Margaret Ekpo went along in his place to protest the colonial policies. She soon turned her focus to bettering the standing of women in society. Ekpo was then nominated as a member of the influential regional House of Chiefs. A few years later, she became an elected politician in Nigeria's eastern region, Etubong Essien again.
She was very active, very outspoken. During that time, most of the women did not take to politics, but he urged them. They came into politics and they were given positions. Particularly those who succeeded to be elected into the House. It was her own activities that led to women being appointed commissioner for social welfare and so forth.
Margaret Ekpo stayed in politics until the start of the Nigerian Civil War in 1967. As a politician, she helped women, especially impoverished ones, by focusing on issues such as improving roads to local markets. One of Margaret's grandsons, Robbie Ekpo, said his grandmother always pushed for equal rights.
She always believed that all children were equal, and then she believed that whatever the male child can achieve, the female child could also achieve, apparently.
Ekpo's strong personality helped her progress the role of women in Nigeria. But she also had a soft side, says her grandson, who remembers how her winning character made her a respected and much sought-after woman.
A lot of people used to come to the house to see Mom from all over Nigeria. And some of them were people who hadn't ever met her.
Margaret Ekpo died in 2006, aged 92, not without seeing her achievements honored. A few years before her death, then-Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo named the Calabar International Airport after her as a tribute to Ekpo's contribution to the achievement of the country.
That was the story of Margaret Ekpo, the Nigerian women's rights activist. Now, if you'd like to hear more stories like this one, all you need to do is go over to dw.com/Africa, and we have lots more like Thomas Sankara, Kwame Nkrumah, you name it. And you've been listening to African Roots, a special series brought to you in cooperation with the Gerd Henkel Foundation.
You heard it right, and now we move over to sports, and teams to the World Cup in Russia are focusing on their build-up matches. World soccer champions Germany begin the build-up to the defence of their crown with a friendly against 2010 winner Spain, with another friendly lined up against Brazil later in the week. Earlier, I talked to Chuck Penfold from the DW Sports Desk, and I wanted to find out if we should expect any surprises in German's team against Spain in the friendly tonight. Take a listen.
The only thing that raised eyebrows a little bit was that two of Dortmund stars, Marco Götze and Marco Reus, were both left out. Coach Löw said that was because Reus has had a lot of trouble with injury. In fact, he's missed all of the major tournaments he's been through injury. So he missed the World Cup in 2014 and he missed the Euro in 2016. And everybody's hoping he can be with Germany for this World Cup in Russia in 2018. So Löw said, you know, he's still coming back from an injury, so he wants to give him a bit of rest. With Götze, it's a little bit different. Götze at Dortmund has fallen a bit out of favor with since Peter Stöger, the new head coach, took over. So he's maybe not quite in the form that Löw would like to see. And a lot of the German press have said they think that sort of by leaving him out, he's sending a message. Maybe you got to up your game a little bit to be part of the national team. But it would be hard to imagine him not being there because Götze, after all, is the guy that scored the winning goal in 2014 in Brazil.
Do you think after these friendlies we will see the probable lineup for the World Cup?
Well, you know, I think we probably know the bulk of the players already. There's players like, now Manuel Neuer, interestingly, is still injured, the first choice goalie. There's been some talk this week about, he broke his foot months ago, and is he going to be back in time? But Löw has said, yeah, you know, we're banking on that. Players like Mats Hummels, I can name a few more, are definitely going to be there. But there's some players in the bubble that may make it or may not make it. And Löw has said he wants in these two games to see a lot of passion. He wants to see guys that, where he's not sure about, see them cement their position during these two games. And this is, as you say, the last two chances he'll have to see the players in a game or in games before May 15th, when he has to name his provisional squad. And that has to then be cut down to a 23-man squad before the World Cup.
The upcoming World Cup in Russia comes at a time when the political relations between the UK and Russia have frayed in the last weeks. Is this likely to affect the World Cup in Russia?
I think that still remains to be seen. I believe the British royal family have said they're not going to attend, and I think senior British officials aren't going to attend. This is all going back to this attack in Salisbury a couple of weeks ago, in which a Russian former spy, who I guess became a double agent, was murdered. I think we really don't know yet. Now, Boris Johnson, the foreign secretary of Britain, has compared this World Cup in Russia to the 1936 Olympic Games in Berlin, which the Nazis were using, you know, for propaganda purposes. And the idea being then that Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, is going to use this World Cup for propaganda purposes as well. That's not really a surprise, though. There's no indication yet that there was some talk originally that maybe England wouldn't go, but if it was just very short-term talk. I can't see that happening. But it looks like it is going to take place under a bit of a cloud.
Chuck Penfold from DW Sports Desk.
Now, looking over to our Facebook page, I see Machimu Mtemi is saying, I'm listening from Mbeya, Tanzania. Welcome. We also have another comment, Muhammad Sani, who says, we are always in legitimacy crises. He's referring to the Cameroon story that we just ran. And now, just to remind you, our top story for the day has been the landmark ruling in Kenya, which has overturned the practice to force annual examination to test whether people are homosexuals or not.
Yes, Wanjiko, you're right. And now we head to Zambia. We take you to Another story where a leading critic of President Edgar Lungu and former Zambian minister Chishimba Kambwili was arrested in Lusaka over allegations of making profits from criminal activity. Kambwili has accused the government of being corrupt and asked, is this a political witch hunt?
Well, Isaac Godwin says the political game is just a tool to oppress the voters. And that's all we've had time for now. My name is Wanjiku Mwaura.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura. Bye for now.